So there's a certain intimacy involved in practice. There's an intimacy with life that you're invited to tenderly surrender to. And that's not a very comfortable thing for most of us, to have this sense of intimacy with ourselves. And metta is all about tenderness, tenderizing the heart and feeling our lives, having an experience with our lives in this moment-to-moment way. So mindfulness is not a permanent state. It's a state that we become acquainted with, and through this acquaintedness of mindfulness, giving attention to the present moment, we begin to notice it more and more. And so that's the practice. So when we're not mindful, we're kind of in this place of the ordinary mind. And the ordinary mind is the mind that we've just been habituated in. It's just the conditioning, if you will, our habit mind. And there's certain things we're conditioned to seeing and not seeing in our habitual habits. You know, like I can go to the movies with some friends. We'll all see the same movie, but when we come out of it, we've all noticed certain things. It's like, you didn't see when he stabbed her with the knife? It's like, no, I was looking at the doggy that was in the corner. You know, those are friends you never want to go to the movies with again because they didn't see quite what you saw. And the same is true in our minds. We're conditioned to seeing certain things, you know, certain formations, certain constellations in life. Choyen Trungpa Rinpoche says, we're all architects of space. We're creating it and making it up as we go, and then we're entertained by our own creation. But it's not to be confused with it being the whole truth. It might be real, but it's not true. So it can be very painful in our walking life. Like I can remember being at a community discussion in Charlotte. I live in the South now, which is, I moved from the Bay Area to Charlotte, North Carolina, so it's been a transition. It took several years for me to just have it be different instead of wrong. That's how long it, you know, took a while, but it's the condition of mind, right? What you're used to seeing, and then we have a judgment about it, and then we think our judgment is right. But I was at this discussion, and I can't remember which discussion it was, but I remember we were talking about the post, the killing of the shooting of one of the black young men by a police officer. So I believe it was Ferguson at the time. So there was a community discussion. I was in a small group, and we were to talk about what do we think happened and how do we feel about it, and a white guy that was there, who I know, who's an attorney that works right there for the city, he said it was just really horrible that, you know, this guy shot this guy, and, you know, he was unarmed and it should have never happened, and I'm just heartbroken from it, and I'm just feeling really horrible. And when I shared, what I noticed that I was sharing was, it wasn't that there was just this shooting, but it was this white person with a gun, this police officer who shot this black person. And in fact, there had been a series of these things happening. So it was, I think these were both very sincere observations. But the difference was the difference between seeing the stars and seeing a constellation. Like once you see the Big Dipper, you can't just go back to looking at the sky. You know, you see the Big Dipper. All of it's changing. But it's what we're conditioned to seeing. So both right? But very different experiences around our conditioning of what we're seeing and how we're trained to see certain things and not other things. And of course, I was right, but that's a whole nother talk. So we remember It's not just that we're conditioned certain ways, but we actually create the story about it, and then that becomes a real shape of truth for us. And it's hard, but not impossible, to kind of dismember and slow down and unpack the creation that we have in order to get a bit more aeration in the experience and see it clearly. So when we're sitting on the cushion, we're actually doing that. We're actually re-examining what we hold to be so true and dear, so that there's a bit more air in it, so that we can maybe consider a broader possibility and hopefully connection. The Buddha teaches about these being like dust particles. And I remember having an experience where where I had gotten so still in a long retreat that I could see the creation of how these aggregates of how my experiences were coming together. I had slowed down enough to see how they actually took shape into being a real truth for me. And it was just happening, you know, multiple times in any given moment. And I think that's one of the promises of our practice of mindfulness, that we can actually discern and unpack what we think is familiar so that we can choose how we respond to what arises. And when we're sitting on the mat, or we're sitting in our seat, and we're sitting here today, and a thought comes up, we can choose to believe it and dance with it, or we can choose to come back to the breath or to the experience of sitting. And over time, with mindfulness, we can begin to actually unpack all the different stories that are packed into an experience. So the patterns themselves is not an issue. The issue is when we don't see that they're a pattern. We don't see that there is a pattern happening. So this is the ordinary mind, and it's often driven by desire, it's driven by a conviction. A lot of times the ordinary mind, we're so driven with the thought of it that we're entangled in it, we're enmeshed in the thought of it. We leave the body when that happens, and we often leave the heart. So this is something, the fast-forward, automatic momentum that runs really fast in our lives. It's like we have the remote and we're changing the channels every 2 minutes. You know, we're just kind of off and running in the mind. This is the ordinary mind. This is the mind that's happening without mindfulness. And for me, as long as I've been practicing, I'm still working with, you know, there are times when there's that flood of the mind just being really busy that way, and I'm off and running. It's just taken me off of my seat. And so the practice has been really helpful, because there can be a subtle shift in noticing that instead of being that. And that's what we're looking at. So Bhante Gananatara, who is a beautiful Theravada monk in Hendersonville, North Carolina. He writes, he said, it is the very mind that can lead the mind astray. And I think that's just well said. And our challenge, as hard as it might be, as hard as the world is right now, our challenge is to not lock down too tightly on what we think we know. Because the moment we do that, we lose a sense of mindfulness. And then there's the meditative mind, or the mind today that we're kind of looking at through the lens of metta, through friendliness. And this is the mind where we can understand that life is not personal, is not perfect, and it's not permanent, you know. And this is the mind that's open and maybe not so expecting or needing to know what's going to happen next. It's the mind that's receptive and a bit spacious. It's got a gentle quality about it. It's not narrowing down so tightly on something. It's not confining ourselves or anyone else. And there's a quality of deep listening in the meditative mind. The meditative mind is helps us see our assumptions, and it helps us align our intention, because we're watching what happens. The Buddha talks about uses the image of a house, and the house has five windows, which are the five senses. It has a door, which is the mind, and it has a ceiling, which is mindfulness. So this sense of mindfulness, this practice that we're doing of getting still and looking, is watching the activity of the sense gates, the mind being a sense gate, because the mind's sense organ are the thoughts, along with our other five senses, that we can actually witness this activity of mind, if you will, of this body doing what it does, and we can be watching it like on the big screen without necessarily merging with it. So it's about bringing a spacious and non-judging friendliness to the observation when we get ourselves still. There's a couple of useful definitions. Again, Bhante Gudanatara talks about it this way. He says, the quality of mindfulness is an awareness. He says that awareness happens just before you start thinking. A flashing split second just before you focus your eyes and your mind on the thing. Just before you objectify it, clamp down on it mentally, and segregate it from the rest of existence. That's just before you fixate. Just before your mind says, oh, it's a dog. That few seconds just before you conceptualize it as a thing is mindfulness. Before you conceptualize it as a thing is mindfulness. This soft, unfocused, awareness contains a very deep knowing that is lost. It's lost as soon as you focus your mind and objectify the object into a dog. Once the mind perceives, mindfulness is quickly passed over. So you hear a lot about the don't know mind. This is the quality of it. The minute you think you know, then, you know, you fast forward. It's like receiving a resume, and you read the paper and you think you know the person. You don't know the person, you just read the resume. This is the idea. Mindfulness practice teaches us to prolong that moment of awareness. So again, we're looking at not just what arises, but the space around it. This is the practice, and this is the territory of metta. This is the atmospheric quality of metta. Winnie the Pooh says it this way. Well, said Pooh, what I like best. And then he had to stop and think, because although eating honey was a very good thing to do, there was a moment just before you began to eat it, which was better than when you did. But I didn't know what to call it. So that's the same thing. The space before the thing you know to call it is the field of mindfulness, is the atmosphere that we're infusing with metta. So that whatever the object is that arises that we clamp down on is within an atmosphere of friendliness. It's in a welcoming atmosphere so that we can have a relaxed awareness. So One of the gateways into this arena, this kind of spaciousness, is what I think is the neutral zone. It's the neutral. It's that space where we fast forward through life. In the metta, in all of the Brahmavihara teachings, they talk about, we talk about this place of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And neutral, or the neutral person, is the person in our lives or in our mind, or the thing in our mind that we may not pay that much attention to. Like in the movie, I'm looking at the person that's being stabbed and the other person's looking at the dog. The dog is a neutral for me, whereas what I was watching was a neutral for her. And we do this a lot in our practice. We kind of notice some things and we don't notice others. And yet this neutral is the thing that's happening most, because when our mind really locks on the object, the neutral part becomes neutral. So in our sitting practice, we tend to notice what gets us all roused up, or what we're worried about, or what shouldn't have happened. You know, we get really preoccupied with what's wrong or what's happening. But then there's all the space around it. There's all the neutral things that we don't tend to notice. So it's what we don't notice is what we are not in the habit of seeing. We're not in the habit of seeing, so it just goes by quickly. That other than the excitable, I don't know about you, but sometimes I can be an intensity junkie. I'm used to a good fight, you know, not a pleasant one. I want there to be some real heat, you know. So if somebody's really being polite and even in an argument, I'm starting to wonder if I could trust this person. We all have our ways about this, but it's what we're used to, not to be confused with what's real. So this neutral experience is the experience that are not well focused. They're kind of fuzzy in the mind. They're kind of hazy-like. You might have noticed on the walk that there were some neutral people. There were people passing you, but you weren't really into them, or you didn't really zero in or notice what they were doing, what they were wearing, or any of those things. This is the neutral territory, and we have the neutral in our mind. Places we miss knowing with a bit more intimacy, with a bit more connection. Places we don't tend to bring into view. So I heard this term that really spoke to the neutral well, and it read, "She is so familiar to me, I hardly know her." That's the neutral. So it could be with somebody we know well, but we've just stopped seeing because of what we think we got it already. So we fast forward through. I remember living in the Bay Area. I went through an experience called portrait therapy, and I worked with this woman who was a portrait artist, and she would sit me in the chair, and I sat there, and she would do something. I couldn't see what she was doing with, you know, this painting, this great music going on. And so 10 minutes later, she had turned the portrait around, and she had asked me, "What do you see?" You know, and I'd look at it, and it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, I see my mother so clearly. She's just right there popping off the page. Bright yellows, and I was like, oh my gosh, where did you get that? So after some crying and some walking, you know, I came back and sat in the chair again, and she continued with the painting, turned it around, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's my son, you know, a little bit of my dad, you know. Another 20 minutes went by. She went back to painting and showed me again, and then it was starting to look more like what I saw myself as looking, how I saw myself. But when I saw it the last time, I saw all three images at the same time, So I could see the my father image, I could see my son image, and then I could see my all at once. Again, the stars were in the constellations. So I can't look at that image and just see my face. I see all of the faces at one time. And that's another way of talking about the neutral, that we have layered lives, layered experiences. And when we think we've got ourselves, we might want to take another look. So neutral tends to be an area where there's a lack of mindfulness, because we're not, you know, the focus is not so clear. Sometimes this neutral place is when we are in situations where we don't notice who's here and who's not. You know, who's represented here? Who's not represented here? So so basically, neutral is the territory or the gateway that could open us more to a relaxed awareness. And it can be the place where we start to have more intimacy with our lives, because we're not fast-forwarding through what we think we know. And so life becomes multidimensional, more colorful, more flavored, like a big pot of soup, and you're allowing all of the ingredients to have their time of release through awareness and how you're adding them to the mix of life. So as this relates to our practice, in metta, we often offer metta to the neutral person. So I'd like to have us do a little practice on that right now. So I invite you to get comfortable in your seat. And it's useful if you can support your own back instead of relying on the back of the chair, if your body allows you to do that. This brings a certain alertness to the practice. And see if you can really plant yourself evenly on your sit bones and allow the spine to be as straight as your body can handle. And when you find that spot of feeling like you're really well balanced, I encourage you to just lean back a half an inch, just a half an inch, and allow the crown of the head to naturally rise. And close your eyes and get a felt sense of this subtle shift. Allowing your hands to rest comfortably on your thighs or resting with each other. And letting your mind rest in the body. And let your body rest on your seat, bringing the attention inwards. And just gently notice the experience of settling in this way, settling in your seat. And taking a moment and allowing your attention to be on the experience of the exhale of the breath. without any effort, just gently noticing and experiencing the exhale, riding the flow of the exhale. Being at ease to the degree that you can. Taking your time for this gentle softening in the body. Let your breath be free. And just being aware here of the experience of the breath, the rise and fall, and the ease that's in between the inhalation and exhalation. Taking your time here, experiencing your life in this way. May I be safe in this moment. May I be content with this breath, just as it is. Allowing all the muscles and the organs on the inside to just soften a little bit with each exhale. Experiencing the body sitting and breathing. May this body and breath be at ease. Placing kind attention on the breath. Relaxing your awareness to the degree that you can. maintaining an awareness of that half an inch in the posture. Just keeping that alignment without effort. Awareness and kindness. Allowing the breath to be a natural relaxer. Like a lullaby. Being curious about the song the breath is singing on the inside. May I be at ease. And bringing into your mind's eye a neutral person. Maybe it was someone you passed on the walk outside, or maybe it was one of the faces you paused with this morning in our beginning exercise. Or maybe it was someone you pass by quickly on a regular basis, like the checkout person at the groceries, or someone at the bank, or the woman or man that bags the groceries. Let's bring into mind a neutral person, maybe a stranger that you know or have greeted. And imagine them sitting before you. And see if you can bring them into focus a bit. Notice what's happening in your body and in your heart as you see this person before you. This person that's lived a full life up to this point. And so much you don't know about them, and that's okay. Just bringing a relaxed awareness to them being before you. Seeing the subtleties there. Notice how you're touched by the experience. without judgment. It's this intimacy with this person, kindness. Stillness. And I'm going to offer some phrases, and you can ponder them or create some that work for you. Again, it's not about the phrases, it's about the intention to send kindness, friendliness, and to open the space of awareness, the field of awareness that's infused with metta. So imagine how wonderful you are in your being. How wonderful you are in your being. I delight that you are here. How wonderful that you're here. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be safe. May you be healthy. And if you can't be healthy, may you accept your physical life just as it is. May you be healthy. May you be happy and content. May you be happy. Keeping them focused in your mind's eye and in your heart. Noticing how you're impacted by these phrases. May you be happy. May you know happiness. I delight that you're here. May you be safe. May you live with ease and well-being. May you live with ease. May whatever good fortune you have, may it continue. May you live with ease. And continue with phrases that work for you. And make sure you feel the goodness of this gesture of metta to the stranger, to the neutral person. Experience the warmth, the spaciousness, the ease of the offer. And now allowing the neutral person to just fade away for now. As you continue to rest in the warmth and spaciousness and the silence for the next few moments. Keeping that posture, that half an inch back for alertness. And relaxed awareness. I'll close with this poem by Ajahn Chah, this writing by Ajahn Chah. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will become still in any surroundings, like a clear forest pool. All kinds of wonderful, rare animals will come to drink at the pool, and you will clearly see the nature of all things. You will see many strange and wonderful things come and go, but you will be still. This is the happiness, this is the metta of the Buddha.